coming back home and taking a look at the JSE's performance amidst it all. The All Share managing a climb over 1% today, with that risk on trade coming back into play. As you can see there, bulk of the impetus today coming through from the Industrial 25 space, it trading 1.4% to the good. Financial 15 managing a 1.25% climb, while the Resources 10 component has gained 0.8%. Joining me at the desk now to have a closer look at the day's local markets action, Devon Shute from the Robea Group. Thanks so much, Devon, for joining us this evening. So we've had world shares and bond yields rising, and this amidst a renewed sense of optimism, I guess, and some surge in risk appetite this morning as investors become a little bit more optimistic about where US-China trade talks are headed, but also cheering Washington's deal to avoid another government shutdown. How much of a dead cat bounce are we potentially looking at today?
Look, I think the market is pricing in a favorable deal being signed by the US and China, hopefully later in the week. I think there is risks that that doesn't happen, or that the uncertainty remains. So I am a bit concerned that maybe markets are getting ahead of themselves. That being said, we despite the positive sentiment, we also had a weakening rand, which helped boost our markets. Resource sector was lagging, but still up quite nicely. So, yeah, I mean, a good day on the market, we'll take it after a strong start to the year.
Absolutely. But there are significant risks, not only globally, locally as well. We've had a few economic prints come our way, unemployment numbers improving, but ever so slightly, and very much on account of the holiday season. You know, how are you factoring some of our economic picture, especially with all that's going on around Eskom playing out into this entire equation?
Yeah, look, the structural unemployment problem is persistent. We're not seeing any big improvement there. Manufacturing's really struggling to get out of the blocks. That came out today. Slight improvement, but really nothing to write home of. And as you rightly said earlier, Eskom really becoming the main risk to our fiscus at the moment. So all eyes are now rightly focused on it. And any way you look at it, it just doesn't look very healthy.
Absolutely, especially for you know, players that are very dependent on energy supply. Miners, a case in point. We had Harmony Gold out with results today and talking about you know, how they're happy with their operational performance. There were a few accounting entries that overshadowed what was a positive set of numbers. How impressed were you by Harmony Gold's print?
I like the numbers. I think operationally they did look pretty firm. I think when you double your operating free cash flow, I think that stems to the quality of your underlying assets. I think they're also diversifying away from purely a gold play. Those assets that you were talking about, those are silver and uranium assets. So yeah, there are some accounting depreciation and amortization line items coming through there, but I think operationally the business is looking good and it's benefited from a favorable commodity environment.
How much sustainability risk are you having to price in, though, given you know, all that's playing out, yes, around Eskom, but also when it comes to concerns around a waning global economic environment?
Yeah, so on the local side with the Eskom concerns, you know, these big players are somewhat used to it, and they are probably more prepared than maybe the average consumer was. You know, they're able to kind of stagger their production and their electricity reliance a bit better. It's still not great because there is a cap on what they can use. The miners as a whole are incredibly volatile and so reliant on those prices that they get in those commodity markets. With globally, I think we are seeing the environment soften somewhat. I don't think it's overly concerning. I don't think it's as sharp as some people are predicting just yet. We're seeing softness in the Eurozone. We're seeing China, which has been well documented, is slowing down. The US is probably the big unknown, and what's going to happen with the federal rate interest rate policy and bonds in that case. To me, that's probably the biggest risk of derailing what's probably a late cycle growth phase.
Yeah, while we're talking about growth and waning prospects, so SPARS reported an 8.2% rise in 17-week sales, buoyed by its South African operations. Were you surprised?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you see retailers report recently, you kind of steel yourself for the worst. We've had some nasty surprises. Really solid set of numbers. And I think, as you're saying, you were probably as surprised as I was with the local operations doing so well. Liquor was the standout performer there. I think, you know, revenue was up almost 20%. Buildit was doing well despite this really tough economic environment. Ireland was also firing on all cylinders. And it was really just Switzerland that was the weak spot in really a respectable set of numbers.
It really is becoming very hard, you know, to pick and choose these companies and who is going to you know, fare better than contenders, because while you've got Spar on the one hand, Raubex painting a different picture completely, is warning that its annual headline earnings per share are expected to come in 20% lower, and that on account of weak trading conditions in the South African construction industry. Do you think that this is an industry that's hit a trough? Because going back to those unemployment numbers, it was construction, in fact, that added some of the impetus.
Yeah, look, I mean, I don't know how low it can go, to your question. I think we are in really recessionary type conditions for the construction industry. Road building particularly, that division in Raubex dragged down the rest of the results. Affordable housing did quite well. Materials division was also acceptable. So, yeah, I think we're really waiting for this macroeconomic underpin to come through, and unfortunately we're just not seeing any signs of it yet.
Are you seeing any underpin supporting EOH at this stage of the game? I mean, it seems to be you know, getting dealt one blow after the next.
I think what was concerning out of all this is one, kind of the abruptness that Microsoft terminated. As far as I know, they've met with Microsoft as we speak, and they're trying to hash it out there. You know, they guided the market that this was a 10 million rand impact on profits for the year. It was not financially material, but the share price told you something very different. 34% at its worst down today, closed down mid-20s. The market could be spooked, but I think there's, you know, this is a bigger impact than maybe they're trying to let on.
Yeah. What's your stock pick right now?
It's one I may have used before, Discovery. I think it's a uniquely placed company at the moment. We're all very familiar with their shared value model in the healthcare, the life insurance in the short term. The launch of the bank happens next month, as far as I'm aware. And yeah, we're excited to see them kind of unpack that shared value model in financial services and disrupt that space. And they're very effectively franchising that Vitality model into Asia, into the UK, into the US, and not only earning franchise fees, but part of the actuarial profits, which we think is incredibly powerful.
Okay, so one to watch. Let's leave it there. Thanks so much, Devon, for joining us in studio this evening. Of course, Devon Shute is with the Robeck Group. Welcome back. You're watching Taking Stock. Well, the world's largest oil companies shrugged off a plunge in oil prices during the final months of 2018, posting some of their biggest annual profits in years. This includes Shell and ExxonMobil Corporation. Let's cross over to Bronwyn now for more detail on the kind of performance these companies have put on and the sustainability of that moving forward.
Thanks, Alicia. Let's start off with a look at what's happening on the oil markets front. We've had Brent tick low from its high early in October. One of the more recent reasons for the dip has been the resumption of US-China trade talks. It's this that's loomed large enough to overshadow OPEC's commitment to curb output. But BP CEO is talking about a flurry of risks that could trigger an energy market crunch. So for some insight, let's cross to Ulrich Bas from Deutsche Welle, who joins us from the Frankfurt Stock Exchange. Or as this all plays out, give us a sense of the kind of performance oil majors have enjoyed in 2018 as a starting point, and maybe how they see this year shaping up.
Well, 2018 was a stellar year for the major oil companies, ExxonMobil or Chevron and BP and Royal Dutch here, and Total also in France. Together, they made almost $80 billion in profits, and that was more than the last year. They also managed to bring up their bottom line as well. And this on the strength of what they did as a consequence after the oil prices plunged a couple of years ago. They radically reduced costs and they also reduced investment. So they're now in a much better place when the oil prices go up again to reap a profit from that. And that brings us to 2019. Already the oil prices right now, about $62 for the North Sea Brent, for example, being lower than what it was for 2018, where it was an average of $71 at the basis for this very good 2018. But because of their cost basis and because of the way they've restructured their businesses, they're also going to be in a good position in 2019 to make a profit. Of course, if the oil prices should plunge, should the world economy take a larger dip than what everyone's expecting, the profits will be nowhere near what they were 2018.
As you highlight there, what the moves in the oil price does speak to is global growth concerns, and this will likely impact inflation scenarios as well. And that will have central banks across the globe potentially repositioning themselves. And into this will step the European Central Bank's new chief economist, Philip Lane. He's already spoken up about the current economic environment and what it means for the ECB and the Eurozone as a whole. So what were some of the highlights from Lane, and what did he have to say on that front?
Well, he says that please don't overreact to individual points of data that are being delivered. So he's basically delivering the opposite message of what we are talking about. He's saying that some of the things that are looming out there, some of the risks, they probably are temporary. And he warns that one shouldn't draw conclusions all too soon, not jump to conclusions. And he says that the ECB will be providing a comprehensive forecast in March. That's about the time. He will be then officially on board after he leaves the Irish Central Bank, where he's governor now. And then the ECB can also sort of decide on how to go through the year. An interesting voice in these turbulent days, in these nervous, uncertain days, where there are all sorts of forecasts being revised downwards.
Perhaps even a voice of reason. But in the meantime, on the corporate news front, there's more trouble brewing for Nissan, it seems. The company is still reeling from the scandal surrounding Chairman Carlos Ghosn. And now it's reported 9-month results, which are somewhat disappointing. So walk us through those numbers, Ulrich.
Well, Nissan had a bad year behind it. The 9-month results, which just came out now, they're showing a drop in profits by 45%. And it's leading Nissan also to downgrade, revise downward its profit forecast for the whole year as well, to a considerable margin. But it's still expecting about $3.7 billion in profits. It's citing weaker demand as the main reason for this year that was not so good. I think the troubles with the alliance with Renault and the Ghosn scandal, not playing into the sales, but certainly playing into the future prospects. The CEO of Nissan, Mr. Sakawa, said now that in future one must act separately and not allow power to be concentrated in such a central way as it was the case in the past, in brackets, like what Carlos Ghosn was enjoying in the past.
Ulrich, thanks so much for your time today. Ulrich Bas is from Deutsche Welle, and that's a wrap of your global markets news. Alicia, it's back to you.
Thanks, Bronwyn, and that's where I leave things with you for now. Up next, it's the Roffey Review, so stay tuned for that, and I'll see you back at 7 o'clock. What's your stock pick right now?
It's one I may have used before, Discovery. I think it's a uniquely placed company at the moment. We're all very familiar with their shared value model in the healthcare, the life insurance in the short term. The launch of the bank happens next month, as far as I'm aware. And we're excited to see them kind of unpack that shared value model in financial services and disrupt that space. And they're very effectively franchising that Vitality model into Asia, into the UK, into the US, and not only earning franchise fees, but part of the actuarial profits, which we think is incredibly powerful.
Okay, so one to watch. Let's leave it there. Thanks so much, Devin, for joining us in studio this evening. Of course, Devin Shute is with the Robeck Group.